Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now we continue our journey we've been on over the past couple of weeks through four of what we're calling the big F's of life. We've looked at failure with Steve Roy a couple of weeks ago, forgiveness with Everett Worthington last week, issues and especially powerful stories well worth catching on the podcast page of our Open House website. Now tonight, freedom. Trish Jenkins is an entrepreneur, wife, mother, and former prisoner. One small decision on what seemed like a great investment opportunity saw Trish on the wrong side of the law and ultimately an 8-month jail sentence in Queensland. But in the darkest places, she found treasure and ultimately true freedom. She found inner strength to make a difference not only in her own life, even in jail, but also in the lives of murderers and drug addicts around her. Trish's Christian faith did not waver and, in fact, only became stronger as she used a bad situation to inspire and motivate others. Two books and 3 years later, her work continues outside prison doors, and Trish is using her painful experiences to spread God's love, and she joins us on Open House. Trish, welcome.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you with us. Trish, most of us would say that you were a normal Australian woman living a normal life. If I'd said to you years ago, Trish, one day you'll end up in jail, what would you have said to me?
Oh, there's no way I could comprehend how that could happen. I was a very conservative, very straight person, and I was very black and white at the time. So it amazes me. If I couldn't prove what had happened, no one would believe me.
So you were proceeding along with life as quite a successful investor.
Yes, I was. And the thing is, when you're successful, other people want to do what you do.
Yes.
Now, that was all right when it came to property, because my husband and I were very successful property investors, and there wasn't a lot of cash flow in property, and so I was looking for other things to do. And I was introduced to a fellow who was a currency trader who was returning interest on private loans, and we loaned him some money, and that went very well. And he said to me, I don't want people calling me all the time. I don't have time. Can they talk to you and then they can give you the money, you give it to me, and I'll pay you the interest each month and you farm it out to everyone. It went very well for a year and a half. And then suddenly he stopped paying. It was my job to tell everyone that we were not getting paid again. That was one thing. But then he did it again the following month, and I had to tell them what he was telling me, and that the markets were down and that he needed to compound our balances. And then by the third month, he said he couldn't do it again, and I just basically cracked under pressure. And I just said to him, look, I've got this bit of money that's come in. Do you think just for this month we could use that to pay everybody and give them some relief, and it'll give you some relief, take the pressure off so that you'll get back on track for next month? And he said, all right, let's do that. And that's what I did. And that was wrong. And I didn't want to be one of these people who were secretive and held back and acted all superior and smug and, you know, because I'm such a good person, God's blessed me. I just wanted everybody to prosper. And we were financing a number of ministries each month with the returns that we were getting. The seriousness of it came to the fore when I was invited for an ASIC interview, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, and I was there to tell them what I knew about him. And I said, well, this is what's been going on. This is what I did to try and fix it. What do we do now? And they said, you did what? And I was advised to go into voluntary administration, liquidation. All our properties were sold up, and we lost our home. So the offence was 2005. So up until 2007, we just watched all our assets get sold off. In 2007, I was served with papers charging me with fraud, because what I had done, people had given me money to give to this fellow, and instead I had given it to the investors, and that was wrong and that was fraud. I didn't sort of see it that way at the time. I didn't realise how serious it was. And that was really, really frightening, because they said to me I could get anything from a fine up to what I got, which was a custodial sentence. And that was really, really frightening. And so it took a year and a half of to-ing and fro-ing with lawyers until January 2009, and that's when I got my sentence.
And you're sitting in the dock as a criminal.
Yes.
Can you tell us what that experience was like sitting there?
Oh, It was frightening. I was shaking, I was pale, and flashbacks of the program Law and Order and every courtroom movie you've watched, and the bad guys over there, and I'm thinking, hang on, that's my role, that's me. I'm the bad guy. I'm sitting here, and the whole world and the law and officialdom is declaring that I'm bad. It felt like what I imagined Judgment Day to be like.
This nice Christian woman who'd been sustaining nice Christian ministries through this money.
Yes, yes. They'd been advised that I might get 2 or 3 months. I might get 6 months, which will be reduced down to 2 or 3 for pleading guilty.
But ultimately it was 2.5 years suspended after 8 months.
Correct. And then I switched into this mode of, it's almost like observation, and I can only compare it to if someone close to you has died and you have funeral arrangements to make and you kind of go on this autopilot where you're observing things.
Yes.
And you'll do your crashing and your grieving later.
It's almost an out-of-body kind of thing.
That's how it felt. And I guess that's a safety mechanism that our mind creates. But I was taken through a door that was in the wall, and it was a very different look on the other side of that. It was the corridor, and the handcuffs came on, and they were heavy, and I just thought, oh, my goodness, this just can't be happening.
Sure. So you arrive at the Brisbane Roma Street Watch House.
Yes.
And you meet Amanda. Tell us about Amanda, Trish.
God is so good. He just puts people in your path that help you along the way. She was able to tell me what it would be like and that this was the worst it would be and that it would get better from there once we were taken out to the jail. And she was a respectable girl, well-educated, nice family.
A lot of normal people in jail.
Well, you know, they're all there kind of normal.
Yes.
But, yeah, a lot of respectable people.
But you would have said you were normal before that too.
Well, I would have. Yeah. Certainly normal in a church sense, normal conservative. Yeah. But everyone can have an error in judgment. You can be driving in your car and you adjust the radio, you swerve off and you kill someone, you'll go to jail.
So you find yourself in the jail after that weekend. Tell me about that experience.
I was in with all of the different women and I was just really surprised that they didn't all look like what I expected criminals to look like. They weren't all scary. Some of them were, for sure, but a lot of them looked very, very normal, and that was surprising.
Trish, where do you say God was during that time?
Well, it's a funny thing, because God was very, very close. When you're in strife, you pray, you know, more than you normally do. And the thing about adversity, Lee, is that if your adversity is bad so that you think, I'm going to walk away from God and I don't want him anymore because this is just too tough, then your adversity is not bad enough. This was way too serious for me to risk doing that. I was in a situation where I needed him desperately, and he honoured that and he showed up. And I decided that I had to go through this his way, and inside me, I had things I could offer to these women, and words of comfort, words of encouragement. And I didn't feel sorry for myself, because when I heard their stories, I thought, there but for the grace of God go I. Now, I was in jail for sure, but some of them had been bound up from the time they were born. I just wanted to rescue them.
And this is where, in a funny kind of way, even in custody, freedom comes in.
Well, it did. And, you know, I prayed for anything that moved. And they thought I was a bit odd, which is fair enough.
Yes.
But there was a chapel service where a lady gave a testimony, and everybody goes to chapel, or who's allowed to, because there's only so many that they can fit. But they go whether they believe or not, because it's a diversion. There's very little to do, so there's a lot of boredom. And I was there, and this lady gave a testimony, and I was asked to pray for someone. And I prayed for her, and God showed up, and she fell down. She was so touched by the Holy Spirit that she collapsed. And it freaked out some of the girls, and I was hauled onto the carpet by the block supervisor, and he just went through me like a dose of salts, and he just was incredibly angry. And he said, you are not allowed to pray for anybody. You can't force your religion down anyone's throat. I'm thinking, who's forcing? And I was also thinking, and I didn't say this, but I thought, gosh, I walk through sounds of, you know, the profanity and everything that I'm forced to listen to, but I'm the threat here.
Yes.
And I went back to the block, and of course they all wanted to know, what happened? Because it was a big drama. And I said, I can't tell you. Oh, you have to tell. No, I'm not allowed to. I can't talk to you. I can't talk to you about Jesus, and I'm not allowed to pray for you. What? You know, and of course, some of them, they're not believers necessarily, but they like that you care, and they hate that someone else has restricted anybody, because, you know, suddenly I was on their side because I'd been in trouble. And it made my prayers, it actually gave them more credibility.
Did they warm to you?
Yeah, they did then, because I'd got in trouble. So there was a bit of a bonding sort of a thing going on.
But also, as you reached out to them with a sense of care and love, ultimately, and extending that sense of freedom.
When you reach out to someone and you take their hand and you cry with them, and you just... And I had nothing that I could do physically for them. I had no power. I had no money. I could do anything, but I could at least care and tell them that they mattered. There was one girl, she was crying on the floor and in the yard outside. It's a concrete yard with a cage around us. And I asked her what was wrong, and she said that she was told when she gets out, she's not going to be given her children back from family services. And I took her hand and I said, look, there's nothing I can do for you, but I want you to know that you're not nothing. You do matter, and my God loves you. And I'm not allowed to pray for you, but if you'd like me to, I will. And she said yes. And I prayed for her, and we both wept together. And, you know, I might not have changed her life, but I believe I changed that moment in her life, and I don't think she'll forget that.
I'm sure she won't.
Yeah.
On Open House, we're with Trish Jenkins, author of Treasures of Darkness, the freedom that I spoke of before. How do you think that that was evident in your life, even in the midst of your custody?
I just kept praying. The best prayer I pray, and I do it constantly, is, Lord, show me your perspective. And I had plenty of times to forgive some of the women and even some of the officers who were pretty horrible. And I would just, it was just awful. And I would just say, God, show me your perspective of that dreadful woman, because I have no compassion for her right now. And he would show me that woman in a different light. And my heart would just soften up again, and I would pray for her not directly for her, but in my prayer time. And I would be free of any bitterness and feelings of injustice and so on, because I was there for a bigger purpose.
Yeah.
Just saying, God, show me your perspective. One day you're going to do something with this. I had no idea what, but I knew that he could turn it around if I went through it with a good attitude and trusting that he can turn it around.
After you made it out and achieved literal freedom, how was that experience?
Well, you know, while I was inside, I used to say, the worst day outside is still better than the best day inside. And the funny thing was, when I got out, it was difficult. I had been holding it together for so long, and I came home, and I had to deal with issues with children and family and my own emotions being out of order. And I was damaged, and I really had to... I got some counsel, I got some deliverance, just in case. I wanted to make sure I hadn't picked up anything that, you know, because you're sleeping in beds where there have been murderers and all sorts of things. And my family were wonderful. But it took some time. It took, you know, prayer, and I was frightened to go back to church just in case people would look down on me. And when I went there, they just embraced me. And, you know, that's the gospel.
Yes.
That's the gospel. I was still frightened. I was a little bit afraid of, you know, meeting people again, and that took time.
Yeah.
But and every now and again, I do meet people who might feel a bit judgmental or a bit superior, but I can handle that now. And I think it's not what... Because I used to, you know, crave approval and people-pleasing, but God has shown me that it's his opinion that matters and that I've got nothing to be ashamed of anymore.
What did it teach you about yourself, do you think, and also about God that you experienced through that time?
It's about having that perspective that God has a plan for your life that is not necessarily about building wealth and doing stuff. It is very much about your relationship with him, and that we need to keep our mind and our heart soft before him. It's not just, oh, God's going to do all this, or I'm in control. We don't actually say it out loud, but we think, I'm going to achieve what God wants for my life by setting these goals and doing this, this and this. Now, I had to grow and learn to trust God and let it coast and let this, it's like a wave that is rising, and I would not be doing what I'm doing now if I had not gone through that adversity.
Because it frees you from a lot of stuff, as you say.
Well, it does. I don't fear loss anymore. You know, a house is just a house. Food is just food. You know, if you're not going to starve, then don't fret about money. You know, we place too much importance on outward achievements and being admired and building wealth, and we say it's for the kingdom, but really we're posing very often, and we sort of mask it with this religiosity.
Yes.
Now, I have no problem with wealth creation. I'm building a business, and I'm, you know, investing again and doing that sort of thing, but it's not an idol. And the thing is, anything that's an idol, God will kick it over. He just will. So you better have the guts. If you think that you're going to be someone successful, you must always be prepared to let it go, whatever it might be.
And how's life today?
You know, I am loving my life now. It still takes courage. You know, it takes courage to go on the radio. It takes courage to go into the newspaper and trust that what's written about you will not be too awful, but it will serve its purpose. You know, I'm not making lots of money yet, and that's fine, but my message is more important than my pride. You know, the feeling of being effective and making a difference is far more satisfying than anything that's material. You know, my children are healed, and we deal with that, and I constantly reframe with them when they bring it up again. I constantly remind them of the good that's coming out of it, and that's what I do with myself, and take my eyes off myself. And quite often our anxieties come about from focusing on self. And you start serving other people and people who are less privileged than you are, you start feeling grateful and satisfied in the serving.
I think you've delivered a very powerful message across Australia. Trish Jenkins, thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House. Trish is the author of Treasures of Darkness. It's been great to talk.
Lovely, Lee. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.